Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Rights for Women would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which this podcast is recorded throughout Australia. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and wannabe author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
Hello, I'm Kim Kelly and this is my latest book, Her Last Words. I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs for you. They kept their voices low, even as their tempers rose. It was a hot night, last blast of summer hot. The cool change running late like a train held up between stations, leaving them nowhere to go but irritation. Thisbe gripped the back of the kitchen chair nearest, her small, slim fist white-knuckled as she hissed, "I don't think I can trust a man who doesn't read." There you go.
And there we have it. A fantastic opening to a wonderful book. Welcome, Kim Kelly, to the book launch.
Thanks, Pam. Thanks so much for having me.
I really enjoyed reading this book. It was a really lovely thing to read, a contemporary story from you, because I've read a number of your historicals and Walking, of course, which was not quite as historical as some of the others, but this was...
Yeah, creeping into the present.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been gradually coming up to the 21st century. I'm going to ask you to tell readers or to tell listeners what the book's about.
The book is, I suppose you could describe it as part rom-com and part crime mystery. It's also a book that delves into some of the goings-on in the publishing industry, an industry that's in the midst of change. It's set between 2007 and 2014 when the digital revolution really started to have an impact. But what happens with the story is that a young woman, Thisbe Chisholm, she's just finished her very first manuscript. She's 25 years old. She's working at a bit of a dead-end job in a nightclub. And she excitedly brings that manuscript home for her boyfriend, lovely John Jacobson, to read. But John is an actor who's just started his very first great job on a soapy, a crime soapy, ironically. And he's tired and he says, "No, Thies, I don't want to read it tonight." And she goes off in a huff. And going off in a huff, she is the victim of a terrible crime and she's killed that night. That happens at the very beginning of the novel. And the novel then unravels not only the crime, but what happens to people who are the loved ones of somebody who's been a victim of a terrible crime, someone who's been murdered, basically, and how grief can turn into terrible depression, how it can ruin your life, and how it can really change the relationships between the people that you leave behind when you go. So there's quite a lot in the story. And the spark of it came from something that was very real in my life as a young person, that one of my university friends, Jen Smith, she was a little bit older. She was almost 30, I think, at the time, and she had just written her first manuscript, which I never got to read. And she was similarly murdered in a kind of freak bag snatch gone wrong. It was a horrible, horrible thing to happen. And I've carried that need to know what happened to her manuscript with me all this time. So, yeah, it just needed one tiny spark and I was off and racing, writing this book.
Yeah. I didn't realise that your friend, or I knew the story, you know, that you told me previously about your friend being killed that way. I didn't realise there was a manuscript involved. Did you ever find out what happened to that manuscript?
No, but in a really awful sort of echo of what occurs in the novel, I had asked a mutual friend, you know, oh, can we, because I just started working as a baby editor at Random House when it happened. And I said, oh, you know, in my naive way, oh, can we get hold of Jen's manuscript and maybe we can do something with it posthumously? And this kind of snooty mutual friend said, oh, no, it was shit, you know. And I was just, it was only a couple of weeks after Jen had actually died and my, you know, when your heart just falls through the floor. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that somebody would say that about somebody's work. And I think that sort of says something about me as an editor as well, that I do find stories, no matter who's written them, particularly precious. And I couldn't imagine describing the work of any of my friends at school. That was a bit shit. You know,
I think I know which character she inspired.
Yes, there's quite a nasty character, involved in really the theft of the manuscript.
Yeah, for sure. So you obviously, as you said, you carried that idea around with you for a long time. What sort of finally convinced you to put pen to paper on that one?
Oh, it was one of those things that I didn't consciously set out to do. I had decided, because I'd really enjoyed writing the shorter form novels, the novellas that I've written, Wild Chicory and Sunshine, and I thought, oh, I really want to immerse myself in the novella. So I bought a stack of novellas, and the first one that I read was The Red Notebook, and the author's name has fallen out of my head, of course. But it begins in Paris with a woman who, and I had no idea when I opened the novel to read it, it begins with a woman who's coming home from work and gets hit on the head by a mugger. And I just... It just literally fit the story from that point. I put the novel down, I put the Red Notebook down, and I started sketching out this idea, and it was like my hands were possessed by something. It just, the story literally just ran out of me. And the whole time I was writing it, I never expected that it would be anything that was publishable. I thought, this is just me exploring, you know, lines of real life through fiction. It's just me in my sandbox. I'm just playing. So then, of course, when I finished it, I giggled to my agent, Selwa, you know, I've written this story that discusses certain things in publishing. You know, I don't think it's worth anything. Would you like to read it? And she said, oh, it sounds interesting. And anyway, I didn't hear anything about it for ages, and then I went over there for a cup of tea a few months later, and Selwa and her daughter Linda surprised me with the news that Belinda Audio had picked up the rights for it.
Wow.
I had no idea they'd sent it anywhere. It was
fantastic.
I cried. Yeah, it was extraordinary. Yeah. So I did not expect this book to be published.
That's wonderful, Kim. So is this sort of a case of like audio first? Because I know that's happening a lot where, you know, audio publishers are looking for manuscripts that haven't been published in any other form previously. They want to get in there quickly and put them out.
Not my relationship with Belinda isn't like that. They publish things as and when they do. They have their own market and marketing strategies and what have you. I just kind of tag along in terms of producing the print book and the ebook with Joel Naum at Critical Mass and wonderful Alexandra Nalus. And yeah, so it's just that same team that I'm comfortable working with. And yeah, it's been a really easy ride. I do know that you know, all of the audio publishers are looking for content, and you know, that's an area of the market that continues to expand, and particularly during these times when so many of us are stuck at home and not necessarily got the concentration span to read a novel, that you know, audio can be really soothing and can really take your headspace somewhere else. So I think it's all been a bit timely.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about the characters in Her Last Words. Penny obviously is the protagonist, our main character.
Thisbe dies in the very first chapter. That's no secret. She's very much a presence throughout the book.
True.
In fact, the book is about her.
Yeah.
And it's about her manuscript. So we never lose sight of Thisbe, and we get to learn more about her life as the novel unfolds as well, and get to learn about her inner secrets as well, and not just what was in the manuscript, but what drove her to write the manuscript. Then you've got her best friend, Penny, who is a book editor and absolute story lover. Gee, I don't know what I based that character on. Penny's very much a creature of my heart. She's very, very passionate about her job and advocating for authors. She gets very frustrated by the publishing industry at times as well. And then you've got John, the boyfriend that Thisbe leaves behind. And John's journey through depression is one of the hardest things that I've ever written. It was a really emotional journey for me, because I don't think it's any secret either that, you know, I have struggles with my own mental health. And when I crash hard. And writing John's story also tapped into, you know, a particular friend that I had lost by suicide. And, yeah, so it was quite difficult. And, of course, when I was editing the novel, a dear friend's daughter suicided, which completely rocked my world. And I was, as I was saying to you earlier, Pam, I think I'm only just climbing out from under the shadow of that grief. So there's, you know, comic elements in terms of the way that it, you know, sort of mischievously looks at the publishing industry and the way that, you know, sort of corporate culture conflicts with artistic culture and what have you. There is a bad guy in the form of a woman called Jane, who's very much a part of that mischief and very much involved in shenanigans with this manuscript. But then you've got the very serious side of that grief, that deep grief that can occur when you've lost the love of your life, basically. But then, of course, I can't help myself in terms of exploring lines of love and hope. Or I put my characters in some terrible situations, but I always have to get them out of it, because, you know, I get asked sometimes, you know, oh, when are you going to write something serious? You know, when are you going to write something that, you know, sort of really explores the dark side and what have you? And I think I do, but I really, really do feel compelled to explore those lines of light, because I need them in my life. And they're a reflection of my life. If I didn't have the love of my Dino, the love of my boys, if I didn't have great friends and, you know, great stories to immerse myself in, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, I would agree. I think you do deal with a lot of serious issues in your books, but you've got that, your ability to balance that with these sort of lovely little lighthearted moments and always that sort of sense of hope that you bring
as well. I have to. I have have to do. When I was writing my very first novel, Black Diamonds, and I blew up my hero, I cried for about 3 days afterwards. I can't believe I did it. I take it very seriously. So I have to laugh when people say, you know, when are you going to write something serious? Because, like, I do.
And there's also, we were talking before we started recording, we were talking about Rich, the lovely bookseller, who is part of the cast.
Of course. Now, as I was saying to you, Rich is the distillation of every wonderful bookseller that I have ever met, I think. He's one of those magical characters who just kind of stepped out of my imagination. He's not like anyone I know. Maybe a little hint of my Dino in him, but he's really just a representation of what our beautiful booksellers do, how passionate they are about what they do, what generosity of thought and spirit they bring to their work. And I wanted to have a hero bookseller in the story, and Rich is certainly a hero bookseller. In fact, I think of all of the comments I've received about her last words, people falling in love with Rich is probably the most consistent one.
Yeah, I can understand that, yeah. And he is the hero of the story in the practical sense as well.
Yes, he's key to solving the mystery of what happens to the manuscript and key to helping Penny, you know, as Thisbe's friend, she suffers her own kind of quieter sort of grief and lack of self-confidence, and she's in a bit of a rut at work and what have you, which are all, you know, symptoms of grief as well. And he helps bring out the sunshine in her life again too.
Yeah, it's lovely. We talked before about, or you used the phrase actually, about all the puzzle pieces of the book, and it's very much a book that has all these different puzzle pieces, which fits perfectly with the whole idea of the crime and the crime being solved. When you wrote the draft, you know, you said that the draft pretty much poured out of you once you started. How much of that was there already, that idea of these different pieces, and how much had to be then played around with in the revision process?
Honestly, with this manuscript, I cannot answer the question as to how those pieces came together. They just did. I was so excited structurally, you know, like as a book editor myself, I was going, where are these ideas coming from? And I think it's maybe it came from a deep love of the characters themselves and an understanding of where I was going with the story. So although I didn't, you know, plot it out to the T, it's not really a story that is necessary. Although it's got a lot of plot in it, it's not a typically plot-driven story. It's a story that's very character-based, and the characters themselves are the pieces of the puzzle. And I think it was just that I loved these characters so much as I was writing them, and I felt so free in writing the story because I was just writing it for me. I was doodling and having fun. So I think when I get into that headspace, I did it with Sunshine and I did it with Wild Chicory as well, that I just let myself be, not second-guessing myself. So hardly anything changed in the edit. And I think it's a real lesson for a lot of us as well, that we spend so much time sitting on our own shoulder going, no, don't do that, or that's not good enough, or, you know, oh, you've got to do things this way, or that's breaking that rule, or what have you. I think her last words breaks just about every rule there is in terms of, you know, mixing genres in terms of, you know, showing a lot instead of telling it. And it's, you know, kind of ridiculously lyrical at certain points as well. It's, you know, sort of, it's got all the no-nos in it, but it works. It works because it's authentic.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's extremely authentic. And I think that's what I loved about it. It's got that quirkiness that you have in your character, and it's beautifully transported onto the page. We love a bit of quirkiness. And it does, of course, touch on, more than touch on, the a lot of issues in the publishing industry. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Yes. I need to really underline the fact at first that, you know, although I've worked in publishing for a long time, none of the characters in Her Last Words bear any relation to anyone who I've ever worked with or anyone that I know. I had to be really careful. It was the first time that I've ever written something that was so close to home that I had to actually think, oh, if someone popped into my head, you know, when I was writing a scene, I had to make sure that, you know, physically and in terms of their personality that they weren't, and in terms of the situation, that I wasn't actually writing any truth, because it's really important to me that I had a shot at the ideas, some of the ideas that occur in publishing, not the people, because most people in publishing are wonderful people and they're really hardworking. And a lot of the kind of bad decisions that might be made sometimes are made because of the pressure that people are under to, you know, fulfill the needs of the corporation and shareholders and things like that. So it was really important for me to make sure that I wasn't going to really, you know, drag anybody else into it. This is just, you know, kind of my mad lens. And with that lens, I wanted to really look at the way that we can fool ourselves into thinking that a manuscript is wonderful. We've all had that experience where a manuscript has been completely overhyped. Mm-hmm. And when you read it, you know, it, you know, sort of comes off the presses and you get it in your hot little hands and you go, oh, was that it? So I wanted to look at that side of things, which, you know, everybody's had that experience. But also quite seriously too, the way that the, you know, major corporate publishers, their relationship with, you know, the bigger discount department stores and the way that that affects, it affects, you know, women's fiction in particular. We know that because it kind of, you know, corrals women's fiction into certain genre streams and the boxes that must be ticked inside the publishing house really are boxes that are created by the big discount department stores who buy the bulk of the books. Apparently,
which is something that I think a lot of readers would be completely oblivious to.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
would not understand that element.
And in a way, you know, sort of, so they should be. You know, it's really, readers love what they love, and there's a certain security too. Like from the reader's perspective, there's a certain, you know, sort of security and loveliness of being able to buy a book knowing what sort of a book that you're buying. Certainly not having a shot at that part of things. But it has had a huge effect, obviously, on independent booksellers in particular, in terms of, well, they can't compete with the, you know, sort of big discount department stores who are selling a book for, you know, half the price that an independent bookseller can buy it for. So I wanted to take a sort of a cheeky look at the way that system is set up and who it affects and how it affects them.
Yeah, and I think cheeky is a great word to describe it there, because you're certainly not, it's not like you're in there on your soapbox saying, you know, right, everybody listen here, you know, it's very much woven in.
Buy books from independent bookstores.
Yeah, it's in there. But it just naturally comes up as part of the narrative and it's part of the characters themselves, which is great.
Well, that's right, because, you know, when Rich, the bookseller, at one point, you know, he's faced with the idea of his business is going down the tubes because he can't compete with the shopping mall down the road. And, you know, that's a, you know, sort of crushing reality for a lot of people. He doesn't want to move from his beautiful shop that he's crafted with care into the kind of lights and you know, shouting bells and whistles of a shopping mall. You know, it's there's a lot to it. And that expertise that a, you know, independent bookseller has too. When you go into a department store, the person on the floor isn't going to know where to find the latest Pam Cook or to give you any advice on Pamela Cook's new novel. Mm. You know, whereas if you go into an independent bookstore, of course the person behind the counter is going to care and is going to be able to look you up and say, oh, there's Pam, you know, and, oh, we can order that in for you. That doesn't happen in a discount department store. And I think we forget how special that is, you know.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a gift. One of my favourite little snippets in there is the tradie who goes in wanting some cowboys for his wife.
Oh, Valentine's Day. I did have a giggle at that.
He wants to buy his wife some rural romance because he's hoping to get some that night. He's not going to go into Kmart and ask that question, is he? He's going to surreptitiously go into his local bookseller.
Yeah. No, I did have a chuckle at that. Well done. What sort of feedback have you had, Kim, from, well, particularly people, other writers perhaps, and people in the publishing industry? Like, have you had sort of comments?
No. I've had a few lovely comments. I think I'm in a bit of trouble in certain quarters, but that's okay. I've always been in trouble there. It's just who I am. And I've learned very much so over about the last 5 years or so that the only opinion that matters is the reader's opinion. That's it. Yep. And whether that reader comes, you know, sort of is a purchaser of the book or a library reader or someone in the local community, it's that opinion that counts, and it's that opinion that keeps me going and gives me the feedback I need. You know, in terms of that sort of, you know, inspiration to keep doing what I do.
Yeah, fantastic. Is there anything else that you would like people listening to know about this particular book?
Oh, it's got a really firm strain of kindness in it too. I think quite a lot of my books do that as well, that the way that not just romantic love, but the way that kindness and reaching out to friends and the complicated nature of friendship as well changes our lives and sustains us and saves lives. And there's a special message right at the end of the book that a lot of readers have responded really beautifully to. It's touched a chord with them, and it's probably the essence of the book, and it's Thisbe's last message to everyone. I won't say what it is.
No, okay, I just got goosebumps then when you mentioned that. It's beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I love
the fact you included that. Because as you say, even though she is gone very early in the story in a physical sense, she, you know, pretty much haunts the page, every page of that story. So it was lovely to have that there.
Yeah. It was another cheeky twist as well.
Love a cheeky twist. Kim, where would people be able to find the book if they wanted to grab a copy?
Booktopia, definitely, if you're after a print copy. Belinda Audio, Audible and what have you, wherever you buy your audio books, she's out there. Borrowbox from your local library if you like your audio books there. And, you know, wherever ebooks are sold.
Yeah.
But yeah, Booktopia, please. By Australian.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What are you reading, Kim? What would your reading recommendations be currently?
Oh, I've had a good run. I really enjoyed The Wild Laughter by Quelan Hughes. It's a family drama that at its heart has, you know, it sounds really ordinary when you say it, that, you know, you've got a two brothers who are rivals, and a father who is dying and a father who has requested their son's help in finishing him off. So that sounds like a fairly typical thing. But the writing in this book, particularly if you love Irish lyricism and you love a few Irish jokes, this is just, it's beautiful. It's just soul food.
It's been so lovely chatting to you, Kim, and of course, you know, we're all sort of struggling a little bit with COVID, but have you got any sort of words of wisdom? Because I love your words of wisdom for people out there that might be.
I wish I did. I really wish I did. I haven't been coping that well. I have to admit. As I was saying to you earlier, it's only really been this last week that I felt like, oh, the sun has come out for me in a way that, you know, I feel like I can handle I can handle what's going on. I can roll with this punch. I think it's really important that we keep reaching out to each other. The things that have really sustained me are the kind words of friends, you know, people checking in. I had a reader check in on me because I've been quiet on I feel a bit emotional about it. That is just magic. It does, you know, so if anybody out there is sort of feeling a bit reticent about, you know, contacting a stranger who's been a bit quiet or whatever, do it. It does it's never unwelcome when someone says, hello, I haven't heard from you for a while, are you okay?
Yeah. It's beautiful. Oh, great point. And a lovely point to end on. Thank you for talking to us, and all the best with Her Last Words and with your next book and your next book, because I know you've got a few in the pipeline.
Thanks so much for having me, Pam. It's always fun talking to you.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now?
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced, and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.